Hi, my name is Patton Oswalt, and I feel radiant about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
You know, it's funny, there's a light coming off of you.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Our setup today is a little different. Usually, myself, Matt Gourley, and Sona Movsesyan, we're all in the same room. This is a little bit of a different occasion. I am in New York City because I came here to do some pretty cool interviews. Mm-hmm. I had a really good time.
Must be nice.
Great.
Big, so happy stars.
For you. Yeah.
Huge stars.
Dandy.
Huge stars.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. But I came here to do that, and you guys remained in Los Angeles. You know, it's a lot of money to fly you guys out here, and we didn't want to spend that kind of coin.
I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
So, elevate really. The content.
Can't put a price on charm. And
You can put a price on charm, and it's not equal to... If you were willing to fly coach, and actually, if you would do that... I know.
Charm
I
like know this, this about don't you. Fly coach.
So anyway, I'm here in New York, and my charming pals are in Los Angeles at the moment. So we're on what's called, and this might be new to some of you, it's called Zoom. Hmm. And it's a technology that really exploded during COVID. This is a revival of our COVID days.
Yeah.
When we were doing the podcast and we weren't all in the same room. So let me just put it to you guys. Do you feel that our energy is different when, say, we're in different spaces? Gourley, you're in your wonderful home in Pasadena. And Sona, you're in a land called Altadena.
Yes, north of Pasadena. Yep.
Never seen it on a map. Anyway, it's like those old maps from the 16th century where they just show dragons and stuff.
Do you look at maps often? You just like look at maps and see if you can find the cities people live in?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And when you said I live in Altadena, I couldn't find it on a map. And then I asked an old man and he said, "Don't go that way." Death and doom await you, sea creatures. No, it's a lovely place and I'm just kidding around. But anyway, we're in different zones.
I can say I feel safer having you at a distance, but the magic isn't as, you know, clicky, you know.
I hate this.
Why do you hate it?
I hate this a lot.
I like you being confined to this small box.
That's stupid. No, come on.
I'm turning your volume down right now. It's fantastic.
I'm here and like I'm only thinking about like, are my boys napping? And then when I'm in the studio, I don't think about them at all.
That sounds like a euphemism.
My boys are napping. Right now, I can tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, now my boys are taking a little snooze.
Wait, what, euphemism for what though? What does that mean?
Testicles. My testicles are asleep.
Oh, you call your testicles your boys?
And they've been asleep for years.
Yeah, they've been, trust me, my testicles went soundly asleep.
Okay.
I think it was 1989 they passed out. They're having a good, long, sleepy, weepy.
Oh, no.
Sometimes I'm at a loud party and I'm like, guys, keep it down. My boys are sleeping. I'd say that all the time.
Messed up.
See, this is the kind of magic we wouldn't have had if we were all in the studio together.
That's true.
No. But because we're all in separate spaces, I feel comfortable when Sona, when you bring up your children, immediately making it about my testicles.
Okay, because you wouldn't have done that in person.
No, I'm very proper when we're in person.
Well, you're a proper guy. I'm a proper boy.
Oh, I love when you do your character work. Who's this character?
Yeah, who's this?
Conan as a proper guy.
Let me hear it.
I'm Conan. I'm a proper guy. I do
okay,
proper
now do your
things.
Do your French guy.
Oh, yes, little Mickey's here.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's the worst character work of all time.
What are you
time.
Talking about? I'm a professional.
Oh, oui, oui. Yes, you like to
Okay.
I would like to apologize to our French listeners.
Can you do better? Can you do a better French guy? You can't.
No, I can't. That's who could top that?
No one
that
can.
That's a French Canadian cartoon. Yeah. I think you're doing.
Yeah, give me a German guy.
Yeah,
give me a German guy.
Wait a minute, that's the French guy.
The French guy's back.
That's the French.
Oh no, that's the French collaborator.
I couldn't do it both.
Yeah.
Oh, just like is hold on. Shut
oh
up,
my God.
Guys.
Okay.
Shut up. I'm getting into character. Shut your fucking mouth real quick. You dumb. Hold on.
Now you got German. Now that's the German right there.
I like the breakfast. I like the Wiener Schnitzel.
Why are you milking a cow?
Oh my God. Oh my God,
Come on. Please.
And I encourage you to go look at the video of this because Sona is putting her whole body into it. And
That's great. Yeah.
Sona, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I mean that not in the way you think.
Oh, okay.
What a delight. What a delight. hey, I love this. This was amazing. Mm. Now we're going to get to the interview part. And for the interview, we are all together for that.
Oh, we better hurry up and get there. Everybody, scurry.
Oh, wow.
You got to fly back. No? Okay. Oh, it's funny when Matt does it. Okay.
No, it wasn't funny.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
I don't know what that was. What was that? What was that?
I loved it.
That was
none
my
of you
impression
were selected
of Sona
of your
doing
character
a French person.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought that was my German guy.
All right, come on. My boys are getting anxious.
They're
get
awake.
This thing going.
His boys were awake.
They just woke up.
Oh, no.
They're like, they don't know what's been happening since 1989. Wait, George Bush's son became president? Shh, quiet. Oh,
there's
wait,
more.
What? And then Trump? What? The real estate from the reality show? Quiet,
they're
testicles.
So meek.
Quiet. Yeah.
Just so
well,
meek.
They are pretty meek. They don't. I love that. That's how my. Hey, what's going on up there? It's dark in here.
They're just talking about presidents.
Wow. Real mystery why I never got the ladies. Anyway. My guest today, and we are all, again, all together for this, my guest today is a hilarious comedian and actor. He's also a co-author of the comic book series Minor Threats, and volume one of the series is in stores now. Patton Oswalt, welcome. Well, I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here.
And that's all the time we have.
All right. Thanks a lot. Check me out, PattonOswalt.com. Tour date's coming up. Thanks. I got five other podcasts to do, man. I'm just doing the promo thing.
Do you know, because the late night show started in 93. That's right. I feel like you were on one of those people that came on fairly early on.
Around, I think, 94. 94 or 95 was my first time.
And then I used to refer to you as just money in the bank, meaning you would come on the show. Not only did I not have to worry about it, but it was going to be really, really funny, and we could do as much time as we wanted to, which is always a gift for someone like me.
You can relax.
I can relax. Patton's here. You would go down these so many fascinating little wormholes in your comedy, which are very, and the way you paint pictures using words always delighted me. You've got great imagery.
Yeah, I always felt good about that.
Well, I see your skills at killing time.
Oh boy!
Taken a turn?
You were the first late night show that I would go on where you would actually give me insight into the sausage making of the show.
Oh, I would.
You were very when we were off mic or going to commercial. You were very open about a guest that had just been on. Where you're like, that was pulling teeth. Like okay. They had nothing to say. And I remember, I'm not going to name the band. I was on one time. And a band came on and was playing. It was one of those early, like, screamo bands.
Yep.
And you just leaned over to me and you went, I hate wisdom rock. And that is the category that I assigned. There are certain bands that just had that whole, take my hand, or that kind of wisdom rock. And it's always insulting because it's wisdom rock from 22-year-olds.
Yes.
Like people who've not had any wisdom.
But they have come down from the mountain to tell you that, and power chords, and also that way of singing that sounds like a donkey is preaching.
Yes.
And it was always just like, I'm going to tell you about a land, and we're going to take you by the hand, and I'll lift you to a higher place.
Right, exactly.
You
come
fucking,
on, you're 22.
Yeah, 2 years from now, you'll be working in a hardware store, asshole. And you're giving us this key to the future.
Let me tell you how love is. No, you don't. You don't need to tell me.
Now he's.
Yeah.
Let me tell you how to mix up that paint. I put it in this machine, and then it's going to vibrate real fast.
Take my hand and give me that coupon for the L Nuts this week. It really was, but that became such a genre for me in my mind.
You know what's so funny is the other thing I was remembering just now as you said it was there was other kind of bands that would come on, and I'm young, I'm 31, 32. Some of these bands are very intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
And they're wearing tatters, like tattered leather.
Yeah.
And they've put makeup on that looks like their eyes are bleeding. And it's just incredibly intense. And the song is them, you know, screaming and hate, die. And I would go over afterwards. And of course, I'm dressed like an insurance salesman. And I would go, and you can see it. And I'm like 31, 32, and be like, oh, well, you know, murder mayhem. You go, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Yeah. And in the commercial break, the Max Weinberg and the Seven would start to play. And inevitably, the guy would take off his skull mask and he'd say, lean over. And they were invariably from the Midwest. And he'd say, hey, I just want to say thank you so much for having us on. It's really an honor and such a pleasure and so nice to finally meet you. And I'd be like, oh, you know, and it turns out like, yeah, this is their act. This is
exactly
show business. And they're lovely fellows.
Yeah, as Blaine Kapatch has a great line about, I don't know if you know who G.G. Allin was. G.G. Allin was this extreme punk rocker. Mm-hmm. He would perform naked. He would defecate on stage. He would throw his poo at the audience. Mm-hmm. It was all in the early 90s. And Blaine Kapatch has this is my impression of G.G. Allin before a show. When I shit in my hand, I've got five. I'm coming right up. Just be ready. Be ready with my towels. But yeah, it's all, it is eventually like, Dolly Parton and the guys from Slipknot could get together and go, oh, yeah, the acoustics and the rhyming are crazy. We were trying to get, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, no, they have all that weird stuff.
This is the stuff I love. I love that it's show business because it doesn't matter. Yeah. Slipknot is another one of those bands where I went out there. They were, I could be wrong, but I think their first TV appearance was on our show. And I remember it culminated with.
It was, and I'll tell you a story about that in a second. Go ahead.
It culminated with the drummer using his head to like bang drums that were on either side of his head. I mean, it was just absolute
like
madness.
Like Animal from the Muppets.
Yes. Yeah. And so I went over and they're, you know, fully on masked and just madness. And I remember coming over and saying, Slipknot. And they all gave me a group hug. I swear to God, no one had showered in a year. And they'd been sweating. And I remembered powerful smell. And all these guys wearing skulls hugging me. And then a minute, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- you know, with his, who hit his head against two drums, saying, no, I'm thinking maybe of, I might try to teach. I might try linguistics. But it was just, I always love that part. I always love where people are flipping identities.
Oh, I love that. Well, okay. So when Slipknot was first on your show, that was their first, and I know this because Brian Posehn called me and said, hey, can you, I had one of the first TiVos for some reason. This is in the infancy of TiVo. Mm-hmm. He goes, could you please record Conan? Cause I have to work late and I don't know how to program my VCR and I don't want to miss Slipknot. And I go, yeah. So he goes, I'll come over tomorrow. I want to watch Slipknot. Cause he was a huge Slipknot fan. So I recorded the whole episode. I mean, I recorded all the episodes. I would just watch them all.
Right.
And on that episode you had, it was John Glazer and Brian and oh God, I'm blanking on his name, but they came out as the Slipknuts.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're like, we double booked. We weren't thinking it through.
Might have been Andy Blitz.
And it was Andy Blitz, Brian
Stack,
and John Glazer were the Slipknuts.
And it was a thing where there were these vaudevillian guys that would come out.
God, it was so
And the whole idea was it was supposed to be just the worst idea ever. They were like, we're the Slipknuts. And their whole thing was
they have one joke.
They had one joke, which is we put nuts on the floor and we slip on those nuts.
Does it go? We're the slip nuts, slipping on nuts, and then clowning around and slipping on nuts. We're the slip nuts, slipping on nuts. Oops, he fell down, and then John goes, I slipped on some nuts.
They repeat the joke like
over,
eight times.
And it's maddening. So anyway, Brian comes over to my apartment.
Intentionally goes, maddening.
Intentionally
yes.
maddening. So Brian comes over to my apartment, and I had the whole short. So I cued it up to where the slip nuts come on. And I go, hey, I recorded the slip nuts last night. And he's like, slip knot, dude. Like I'm mispronouncing it. I'm like, I watched the whole show. It's slip nuts. He's like, slip knot. I go, well, this is what I recorded, dude. And they came out, and he just like stood there like, in silence for a second, like, what? I'm like, dude, it's a sketch. Here's something. Like, he got so pissed off at me because he didn't know that that's what you guys
okay,
have done.
This makes me so happy. And, Blay, you're going to remember what this is, I hope. But what we did once as a prank is we had Slipknot come on a couple of times, and it was just infuriating. I think, you know, obviously some people in the crowd got what we were doing, which yeah. was being intentionally stupid. Mm-hmm. But it was so irritating. And then one of my favorite things ever is we sent Slipknot to an actual heavy metal concert. Have you seen this play?
One of the best pieces of footage
yes,
I've ever
yes.
seen.
So which one was it?
I was just about to look that up. It might have been a Slipknot's concert. They might have got opened for Slipknot.
No. They opened for, I've seen this sketch. They okay. opened for Slipknot, but you did this whole story where they have all, the Slipknots have broken up. One of them joined an ashram. The other one, like they did like this beat. Now they're back together and they've like, were, and they just still do the same act, but they're basically, the backstage guy is like, you better get off as quick as you can. Like, they're going to be, and I don't know, someone got a great shot. Ladies and gentlemen, Slipknot! But the crowd's just like, Slipknot, yeah! So they're all going crazy, and then the Slipknots come out, and they got
dressed as vaudevillians.
Vaudevillians with bags of peanuts, and they get this moment where the crowd is like, yeah! And then every arm just goes down, and you see the anger.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's one of the most hilarious pieces of footage.
And they do like the Slipknots, Slipknot. And they do that in front of the crowd and they commit to it. And then I fell down Slipknots. And the guy backstage said, you better get the fuck out of here. They're going to kill you.
Yeah, like not, don't just leave the stage. Get out of the venue. You're dead. It was amazing. And from what I heard talking to John Glazer, Slipknot loved they loved the Slipknots on the show. They
yes,
thought it was great.
Yeah.
And they're like, they have to open for us. I was like, okay, they're going to get killed.
It doesn't always.
That it was like viral before viral.
Right,
it really
right.
was.
Right. You had to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because I remember you had this great bit you did on the show once where you talked about TiVo, and it was when TiVo was fairly new.
First came
and
out.
And it was a line that I just loved. You'll obviously remember the bit much better than I can, but it was the problem with TiVo is that sometimes it would try to anticipate what you wanted.
Based on what you've been watching and oh boy.
Yeah, and it was this line, and it was TiVo grabbing things that you didn't want, and sometimes it's embarrassing, and you just went, oh, TiVo, no.
Oh, no. It's like a little kid picking up a gun. No, TiVo, no, TiVo. Yeah, it was. Yeah, because you would get, I had a TiVo and I recorded a couple of Westerns and I woke up the next day and there were 30 shows on my TiVo and I realized, oh no, they all have horses in them. He thought, well, horses.
TiVo is a he.
TiVo! No! But you like horses! Like he was so angry.
But
it's so weird how that's the infancy of AI, and now if I walk into, like if my phone's in my pocket and I walk somewhere and then I go home and use my computer, there are ads for the places I visited
yes.
that day that are like, now it's just second nature.
Okay, so this is something we should
really
just,
creepy.
I mean, you have such a agile mind, and I'm thinking, oh wait, Patton's going to know, he's going to understand, because in my thinking, AI has been in the conversation like 35 or 36th on the list of things that we need to be worried
yes.
about. And then in the last 3 months, it went right to the top of the list.
Yep.
And now it's all anybody's talking about because it's, I mean, it's chat.
Well, because it's all these people that, again, like anything, I forget who said this, but any new invention has practical use accidental harm and then premeditated harm. So like an axe, you can cut wood with it to build a fire and warm yourself. You can also drop it and cut your foot off, or you can murder someone with it. Right. But when the axe first showed up, people were like, this is great. What a great tool. And then it takes a while for people to then run the other scenario. So I'm sure that AI was looked at as, wow, what a cool thing. And it's a learning computer. And now they're just starting to realize the accidental part of it and then the malevolent part of it.
But here's the other thing which needs to enhance the analogy, because the one way it doesn't hold is an axe doesn't get smarter.
Right.
This is, so in the time that you and I are talking about AI, it's listening to us talking.
Exactly.
And it's anticipating things and it's growing, and you think, am I like 3 months away from there being a really accurate porno that I'm in? And I'm only saying this because I did some porno, and I'm trying to cover. I'm trying to cover my tracks.
You're trying to plant a seed that it's a deep fake. Well, it's a total deep fake.
I mentioned it on my podcast with Patton.
Okay, well, okay. Here's something that's going to be really weird, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and there have been some podcasts where they warn about AI, and they've had experts on. So in a year from now, we'll suddenly. Certain podcasts that have been warning about AI suddenly be gone or delete. Like, if that starts happening, right. Then yeah, these guys were right.
That's that Rocco's Basilisk thing that talks about if you are anywhere on record at any time in human history against AI, there will be a culling, and that like Singularity and Skynet and all that.
Well, so, you know, what's interesting is that
I'm not saying that I believe that.
But in the old science fiction, it was the computer actually comes to life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it. A Macintosh comes through the wall and starts punching you with its buttons. And you're like, okay, that's stupid.
Right.
But the idea that it would just create confusion was something that I never anticipated, which is suddenly, you know, because think of all the thousands of hours of footage there are of you, Patton, and then it can know your voice, it can create different images, and suddenly, hey, there's footage here of Patton committing this horrible crime. Let's
exactly.
get him.
Yeah, there's all these weird, and also it could be, what I'm worried about is a computer or an AI that does something that it thinks is being benign. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you, let's say you were to task it to solve world hunger, and in a benign way, it would go, well, one way to solve world hunger is to get rid of this chunk of the population,
right.
And then other people will have enough to eat. Like, and thinking, what a good job I'm doing right now. Like, thinking it's running its own programming.
Right.
The one scary thing I've heard, and it was a guy trying to reassure me, was this is how into the weeds we are. I was talking to a guy that works with AI and does computer systems, like, you know, the ones that regulate the water and the power grid. And I said, well, you know, I read this review of there's a book by Ted Koppel called Blackout about what happens when the grid goes down, mm-hmm. what skills you're going to need. And it just, I'm worried because I don't really have any practical skills. And then he said, to reassure me, he goes, oh, we're way past the point of being able to shut the grid down. It is self-repairing enough that you could only ever shut down a very tiny part of it. There are backups for backups, some of which it can now build itself. It can't ever be totally unplugged.
Right.
This whole scenario about what happens when the grid goes down. Grid can't go down anymore. Not totally. I mean, part of it can, but not totally. Because it can self-repair. Again, not reassuring at all.
No.
Yeah. And also, we don't need a computer to become fully intelligent and sentient to do damage. Partial intelligence. In fact, it's even more dangerous if it has the intelligence of a 5 or 6 year old, but is wired in to our nuclear arsenals, to our power grid, to the grid that's supplying hospitals or whatever. If it has that mentality, we could be in a lot of trouble.
Are we going to be looking back on these conversations about AI the way you can look back at on my show and in the media in 1999, we were all talking about when it flips over to the year 2000, the coding,
you know, I remember that.
So remember, everyone was saying ATMs won't work. Everything's going to crash.
Right.
And there's this essential bug in the way they coded it, because no one ever anticipated the internet. They never thought about this problem, that the years are going to change from 1999 to 2000.
Exactly.
And so now we all find that quaint. Can you believe we were worried about that?
It was so, yeah, like those were our worries. Well, the numbers can't switch over. They didn't. Now it's like we're beyond the numbers. Mm. It's how fast is this thing learning? And again, everything that we're making fun of now, when writers make fun of ChatGPT and look how bad this writing is, it's in its infancy.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
It's in its infancy and it's growing exponentially. We will get to a point where we won't be able to distinguish anymore. And that's going to be terrifying.
So I'm thinking that if it knows the tone of my voice, and there's lots and lots of footage of my voice, Goarly's voice, Sona's voice, your voice.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an upside. Where it just keeps coming out with new episodes
that you don't have to do,
but we still get a little paycheck, but we're not doing it, and it's us.
Or do you get a paycheck, and Matt and I just don't get a paycheck?
You get a paycheck. Okay. It doesn't look anything like my paycheck.
Oh, right,
or
right.
ChatGPT AI, if you're listening, do Sona and I get a paycheck, and maybe Kona doesn't?
Oh.
Because he seems very doubtful about AI. Where we're all in on.
I just suggested. Hey AI, I just suggested that you could regularly take over this podcast. Mm. And so I just gave you your big break in show business, pal. And so,
wait a minute. Hang on. Let's think about this the way an AI would think of it, though. What's the essential component? Is it the people programming the MacBook? Or is it like the MacBook itself is shiny and people want to buy it, but that it's nothing without the programmers. So would it look at on-air talent as, well, that's just the frame. It doesn't matter what that is. And if anything, it'll just create some. You've seen all the pictures of just all these random people. And it's like these were all created on a computer and they just look like random photos of people out in the world. They
so
don't
a new Max
look
headroom.
Weird. A new Max Headroom.
Yeah.
Oh. As long as it kept my hairstyle, I'd be fine with that.
That's kind of Max Headroom-y.
You kind of anticipated it.
Yeah.
I did.
You
I did look into it. I've already had people sending me. There's one Conan O'Brien eats fried chicken and then crashes in a car. And it's like this kind of Frankenstein monster version of me.
Right. Now it is. But like they can, it's going to get to the point where they can go, Conan O'Brien side stage at Baruch Assault 1995, and it will look like an archival perfect footage of you just standing watching. Like it'll be able to create that,
right?
And it's like, oh, he was at that show, here's a photo, you know.
Right.
And look, some of the deep fakes, like I've seen on Instagram, people that put like Arnold Schwarzenegger's face on people, and some of them are kind of goofy. And there's one, it was the Animals singing House of the Rising Sun. They put his face on that broadcast from the 60s, and I could not, it looked like a young Arnold singing House of the Rising Sun. For all I could tell, there was no seams, nothing. For every 10 janky ones, there's one where you're like, oh, that'll be the one they build on to get to the next level of realism.
Well, then you start
really
to,
scary.
I mean, I've seen already some photos that are completely AI, and you think, why would someone hire a supermodel again?
Exactly.
They're stunning. These photos that they put out are absolutely stunning, and this almost makes me happy that I didn't become a supermodel, that I took the left path, not the right path.
Right.
I thought you because chose not to be a supermodel.
I chose.
Okay.
But why?
Although, okay, here's the thing though. Last night I got to go to the premiere of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh.
Yeah, I have that kind of pull. So, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is so over the top cartoony that it actually is, it connects even more emotionally. Whereas a lot of motion capture and a lot of making it look very human, for some reason you don't link to it, but because these are humans creating through art, the way that humans act and talk to each other. It was weirdly, there are scenes where I was almost crying because it's so emotional, even though these are very stylized cartoons, but they actually connect. So maybe there will always need to be some kind of human element behind it. However, that might also mean there doesn't need to be that many humans behind it. There won't be that many jobs left.
And they can just harvest our brains in jars anyway. So we're fucked.
Whatever. I'm a lot more optimistic. I don't know. I just don't think they could. I don't know. Maybe I'm being just naive, but I just don't think machines can get like human nuance the way humans can. Like a machine's never going to write Succession. It's never going to write Friends The Office.
You think there'll be a merger at some point, though? And that's just evolution happening with a natural force that then is the next step.
But even the people that are saying, well, what if ChatGPT is just there to supplement your writing? Like, if you can't think of a good transition, ChatGPT will spit out 20. But it's like, I still want the humanity of, like, there are scenes in Jaws, they don't quite end right. Mm-hmm. It's still a brilliant movie because it's Steven Spielberg and it's a young guy making a movie and you feel it happening.
Yeah.
And you're drawn in. And if he had had, like, well, maybe transition this way, here's five other options, dude. Like, it wouldn't be the movie that it is.
Well, yeah. I think this is something that I can think can lead us back into our various crafts, which is...
You mean back into hope? Lead us back into some kind of hope?
Which is, as you know, mm-hmm. I heard you talk about this once before, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but how great limits are.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, again, I think a lot of you should be able to say absolutely anything you want in comedy. No. Have some restrictions there so you can find clever ways around them, because then that makes what you're doing more shocking. If there's no limits, then nothing's shocking and nothing's startling. But when you know that there are certain things, how do you get around that? Yeah, you're right. And same with music. And same with movie. Look, if you're shooting a movie, but you can just do it all on a computer and you can create any landscape that you want, then it's not that urgency of, like, we've got a day on this location and this actor's having a nervous breakdown and there's a cloud over the sun. How do we make this work? What do we do? We got to, and so many great memorable moments in movies came because stuff wasn't working.
Well, it's like, it's the classic thing you said in Jaws. You mentioned Jaws and the shark, Bruce, wasn't working correctly. So you don't see the shark nearly as much as they wanted you to see it for a lot of the movie. That turns out to be brilliant. It makes the movie. It's terrifying because you don't really get a good look at this thing.
Yeah.
And it's to this day, when I watch that movie, it's electrifying.
Yeah.
But had... greater technology been around or more money, mm-hmm. it would have ruined the movie.
That's why the first Evil Dead movie, I read this interview with Sam Raimi, where it's like, we want this evil force to be floating through the woods and you see it from the evil force's point of view, and he goes, here's our process to get that effect. How would you do that? Well, you build an anti-gravity disc. Well, there aren't any anti-gravity discs. What's the next thing we can do? We could get a huge board and fasten the camera to the middle of the board so it wobbles a little bit. Let's do that. So they're literally running through the woods with this wobbly board, and it created this weird look that you'd never seen on camera before.
Right.
And it was teenagers out in the Midwest with their wobbly piece of wood basically creating a new thing in cinema that's now used all the time. But it's so eerie watching that first film because it's so handmade that it actually feels real.
But that's why I agree with you, Sona. I have hope because I do think that human creativity is this crazy, unyielding force. People just have to. Now, there are a lot of things that I would worry about, but I'm not that worried about me being in a porno.
I am. I'm really worried about me being in a porno.
For this whole room, we are very worried about that.
I'm worried. I'm going to have to see it.
Very worried. Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a cross between me and John Tesh. Oh, just really going at it.
God.
But I sometimes encounter people on the street that are saying, they'll recognize me and they'll say, don't you hate today? Everything's so PC. You can't say anything. And I'll think, no, you can.
Oh, you can if you're clever. You can get away with anything.
Well, but also you just limits. Limits are healthy and they're part of life. Yeah. Gravity is acting on us all the time.
Yeah. Man, why do we got to be held down? Because we'd float into space and die. You should be happy that's there. What are you talking about? And by the way, get ready for, there are going to be periods where AI will become this weird flavor of the week. Someone will do something cool on AI that people will run to catch up with. Someone should do either a documentary or write a book about after Jurassic, before The Matrix. Mm-hmm. After Jurassic Park came. After Jurassic Park came out, every movie suddenly was like, gotta have CGI. That's what people want to see. They want CGI. They didn't realize that, no, Jurassic Park still tells a compelling story and is great filmmaking. They weren't just going to see CGI. So you saw, it was like a decade of terrible CGI in films. Godzilla, Dragonheart, Air Force One, Escape from LA, where they were just putting in CGI almost as if that was a star of the movie.
Right.
And you'll see this CGI. And then it wasn't until The Matrix came along that then someone took it and took it to the next level. So In other words, and now there's a weird rebellion against a lot of CGI. A lot of filmmakers are trying to do practical effects.
Yes.
And filmmakers want, I mean, I think it's one of the reasons that the Top Gun movie was so huge and why Tom Cruise still has this massive career, because he's willing to go out and kind of almost kill himself in every film.
Yeah.
There's not CGI trickery going on. It's like, that dude almost died. So
I'd pay to see that.
But there will always be that pushback of, because I think any kind of new technology also creates that sense of like, well, there's nothing at stake here. You know, when I watch Escape from L.A. and Snake Plissken is surfing alongside Peter Fonda and it's clearly a computer generated wave, it's like, no one's risking their lives making this movie. This isn't exciting.
They're risking their careers.
They're risking their careers. Yeah. That is true. You know what?
Credibility is the only thing risked.
Yeah.
In this
but
movie.
Yeah, like that. And then you see, you know, there's always pushback. And then the same thing will happen with comedy. Same
Someone
thing
told me that in the new Oppenheimer film, that he didn't want to use, the director didn't want to use any CGI to create what we all know is the explosion of the first atomic bomb. Yeah. So instead use like hundreds of thousands of sticks of dynamite. And you think, okay, it would have been, I mean, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know what it looks like, but there was a commitment to, no, this really has to look, this has to look real in some way.
Although,
by the way, I think 7,000 people were killed in the making of that movie.
I'll go see that.
Yeah.
I'll see that. Sometimes now the cost of CGI at the level that movies like that want to do it at, it's actually prohibitive cost-wise and it's cheaper to do the real effect. In Tenet, when that plane crashes into the airport, that was going to be done CGI and it's all done with a real plane and real explosives because it was cheaper to shoot the real thing. A CGI thing would have cost way too much money and it was quicker to do it that way because they're just, we set up our cameras and we got to shoot this. We got to get this in this take. Whereas with CGI, it would have taken an extra 6 months and all this extra money and all these extra crew people. And he's like, let's just shoot the thing.
I love the image of the CGI guys going, well, and here's what it's going to cost. And good luck. Wait, you did what? We just bought a 747 and we packed it with explosives and we hired a guy to kill himself and drive it into an airport.
We set up a bunch of cameras and crossed our fingers. I mean, that's, by the way, I do love watching old, I mean, I have the Criterion Channel and Turner Classic Movies because I'm a film geek and I also love watching old movies, especially old stunts, even like movies in the 70s where you're like, someone almost died. And stunt work back then was, okay, here we go. Hope no one dies.
Well, car chase and bullet is one of those things where you're watching it and you think, I think someone did lose their life in the making of that. And
But it's one thing to have a chase like that in Bullet, which was a major studio movie. I'm talking even the B-level drive-in movies. People were almost dying. There's a Joe Don Baker movie called Framed. And there is a stunt where a train hits a car and a guy has to jump out of the car before the train hits it. And it is, when you see it, you'll know it. It's that dude almost died. Like he barely gets out of the car. Clearly something's going wrong. And then as he's jumping, the car explodes and the fireball kind of engulfs him for a second. And then he gets out of it and they just left it on film. And that was stunts back then. Well, hope we don't die. And before the stunt, when the car makes a right, in the background, you can see the entire crew is all sitting on bleachers because they want to watch this. Like, this guy's about to die. This is going to be great. Like, they just shot this movie. So, yes, for Bullet, you're like, this is a major movie. Steve McQueen, huge star. Of course, but this is like Joe Don Baker. We're shooting this in 2 weeks down in North Carolina.
So they told a guy, you're going to get stalled in front of a train. Your job is just to get out before the train hits.
But really wait till the last second if you can. And we're just going to run a friggin' train at this. Look up Joe Don Baker Frame. And it says like the most dangerous stunt you've ever seen. And by also, even in comedy, you ever see Used Cars, Robert Zemeckis' Used Cars?
Yeah.
There's a scene, there's a dude like walking across a road drunk and this car is zooming up and barely misses him. And it's done as a joke because the actor's doing this, just walking around drunk, but he's just improvising it. If he had gone the wrong way, the car would have killed him. It's in the middle of a comedy. You're like, oh God, that guy almost died.
Do you remember there was a film with Lee Horsley called Sword and the Sorcerer and the bad guy does a high fall off a cliff and he died, but they left it in the film.
They left it in?
And it's his death fall is in the movie.
Because that's what he signed up for. And in that culture back then, it was like, that's how I want to go.
Yeah.
Leave that in. That's how I'd want to die. It's nuts.
Maybe afterwards.
Maybe.
If they were alive for 8 seconds, they were like, don't leave that in. Their teeth are coming through their chest cavity.
Take that.
Okay.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Okay, here we go.
I love this.
Visual bit on a podcast. Oh, but you can look God. This
that's
up.
That's all right. Look
some
it
of
up.
This
watch
is on this. Video.
Look it up, fuckers. Oh, I'm so happy right now.
Joe Don.
Look at him.
These guys both auditioned to be Duke boys.
Oh my God.
What in the hell?
He catches fire. His leg catches fire.
Don't you get the sense that he also slows his roll so he can be a little closer?
Yes.
God.
That was fantastic.
I mean, by the way, yeah, you can see at one point, you can see the crew is all lined up in the background watching this. But like,
Oh,
he's fine. You know what that guy got? $100.
Yeah, $100. Yeah, and maybe they comped his room.
Wow.
Yeah, but like you watch a lot of Australian action films from the 80s, especially like The Road Warrior. There are stunts in that movie that at the time they were saying, oh no, it was all in the editing because they were trying to work in Hollywood. But then there's a documentary about the making of, and there's people just getting racked up.
And the Philippines too.
The Philippines stuff.
Capitals
oh,
where
Lord.
They would just do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, people would do anything.
The biggest thing I notice is editing. Movies, particularly, and TV shows are edited so tightly that there's hardly any air. And I find it fascinating to go back and look at a show like a late 70s massive hit show, like say a Chips or something like that. And literally a guy will drive up. My job is to drive up in a car and meet with you in a parking lot. And so I drive up in a car and it's supposed to be a tense scene. And I'm here to talk to, you know, Patton Oswalt and tell him to back off my territory or I'll kill him. I pull up and I get out of my car. I unhook the belt, get out of my car, shut the door and then start walking. And I've parked like 15 feet, 20 feet from you, and they show me walking all the way over to you.
All of it.
And, you know, you look at how today the editing is so, take another frame out. Yeah. And what we're seeing, everything is so hyper-compressed that I know that when I watched Late Night with David Letterman shows that I had been watching and, you know, adoring in the 80s, when I went back and looked at them later on, I was like, huh, it's slower than I remember.
Yep.
And it's quieter than I remembered. And there's more, like, it's not this explosion of fireworks. And I know that, okay, the pace ramped up. If you look at the arc on our show, I know the pace ramped up.
Yep.
But I bet you people are going to go back later and say, this feels slow to me, this Slipknot bit. You know? And I remember us thinking like, well, this is so much faster than what anyone used to do. But I think we've hyper-compressed everything.
We think that interesting equals spectacle, whereas interesting can be two people just having this really cool conversation that doesn't necessarily pop. It's got to pop, 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 pop. No, just let two people actually have this weird, interesting conversation in it. But no one has time for that anymore because you can watch all of your, you know, all of YouTube is 20 craziest moments. It's like there's no lead up anymore. It's just all, don't you want just the marshmallow things from Lucky Charms? You can have them all now. You don't need all the cereal bit. Like we all, and so we've lost those moments of, sometimes the reason that the best of clips are such huge laughs is because they came after a long time of silence. And then there was that explosion. But all they want now is the explosion.
Yeah.
And it's like, but there's, I was doing punch up on a movie. I'm not going to say which one because it was terrible. But the director showed me and the punch-up writers, he showed me the last shot. Remember that scene from Bringing Up Baby where she goes up and he's doing the dinosaur skeleton and then he catches her, she slips, and instead of trying to save the skeleton, he saves her, but the whole skeleton collapses.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's this beautiful, it's an amazing shot and it's really startling. And Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want every shot of my movie to have this. Boom, 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 boom. And I was like, well, the reason that shot is so memorable and is so effective is because it comes after just bantering and do these people hate each other? Do they not? But, oh, he decides to save her. And it's a great vision. But if you do every shot like that, it won't be special. And he was just like, no, every shot. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
And the movie was horrible. It's comedy and it just didn't work because he wanted it to all be that scene. I was like, dude.
Let's see a major Hollywood film comedy that didn't work.
Wait,
that really narrows it down.
Yeah, it's you'll be able to put it together. I think you'll be able to suss that one
was it
out.
Joe Don Baker in the frame?
Now it's,
I was okay. By the way, speaking of stunts in the 70s, mm-hmm. I did Brooke Shields' podcast. Can I talk about other podcasts?
Yeah,
on this one?
Of course.
Okay,
as long as it's not Brooke Shields. She and I have major beef.
Oh, the feud.
I'm the only one with major beef.
Conan was up for the role in Blue Lagoon.
Oh, yeah. No, didn't get it. Yeah. Dude, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Well, I go, you know, you got to do some of the really gnarly 70s movie making. And I go, in King of the Gypsies, you're in a car and the car crashes. And she goes, oh, my God, you remember that? I go, yeah, because it just, if I'm not mistaken, it's just a dude is sitting in the back seat filming and you and Eric are in this car and it just gets T-boned. She goes, yeah, that's pretty much what it was. The director was in the back seat and our car gets T-boned. And I go, what kind of stunt rigging did they do? And she goes, oh, right before we shot it, the stuntman came over to me and said, you should put your seatbelt on.
Oh,
it's like 3 a.m. in Central Park.
Yeah.
She's a teenager. Oh, yeah. Put your seatbelt on. Okay. Yeah. And then goes back to his seat. I'm a professional stunt coordinator. I got to make sure everyone's okay.
I got to make sure the 16-year-old's
yeah,
all right.
He's not going to die in the scene. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Now, I'm not saying we have to go back to risking people's lives, but I think that people will always hunger for actual human emotion. Again, Succession just, you know, was the biggest show, had no marquee stars in it, but it was amazing acting, amazing writing. Word will get around about that.
Yes.
People will go, you can't believe this show. It starts off really slow, but my God, does it pay off.
And also, I mean, yes, such great acting, but good Lord, that writing, masterful writing, and so many lines, so many quotable, beautiful lines in Succession.
And so many real lines where you're like, yeah, that is the world right now. As painful as this is to listen to, that's the world.
Now, I want to end up in this nice place, mm-hmm. which is to say something, this work you've done, Minor Threats, which is in bookstores and it's available nationwide.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you have, I know that you have these passions for comics and you get to do that. You get to be in that world. You get to make this stuff that you used to stand in line hoping to meet someone like you.
Well, I stood in line for 3 hours to meet Neil Gaiman back in 1993 in San Francisco to get my Season of Mists hardcover signed, and now I'm Matthew the Raven in the Sandman show on Netflix.
That's insane.
So that kind of, I always, I remember this quote from John Waters is a great person to pattern your life after because he's like, I work hard at my stuff so that I don't have to work with people I don't want to work with.
Yeah.
And I can just do the stuff that I like. And it also gives me, because a lot of the stuff that I like to do is not going to make me any money. It's not going to increase my fame, but it's really interesting. so doing Minor Threats. No, writing comics does not make you a lot of money, but it's a blast. It's so fun to do. You write the script, then you get the rough pencils, then you get the inks in, then you get the, I mean, the whole process to me, I could do it all day. And so I'm lucky enough that I worked hard enough as a stand-up and I go and do movies and I can go do comics. And the comics that I put out now, I go with companies like Dark Horse, and where it's all creator owned, I own it. If something happens with it, it's mine. I'm not having to worry about, well, this company needs these things and these things. And the, you know, I have to do stuff. I don't want to do a one for me, one for them within a project I'm doing. I'm okay doing a one for me, one for them overall. But to split up your own project doing that, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Like I have this great story to tell. Okay, but you got to put we're the Shazam movie's coming out, so you got to put Shazam in there. Oh, it's a little, you know. So that I never had to do that.
Right. You don't have to compromise.
I don't also I'm just happy that I'm not a car guy, I'm not a clothing guy. I don't care about to me a car. I don't see the outside of it. As long as it gets me where I'm going, I could care less what it is. So all that money, I don't put any money into that. I don't own a house that George Carlin says, I don't own a house that I use to scare people with. I love that phrase. Nice little house I can live in. There's no right. crazy nut. I just keep it very small and very simple. And then you get to just enjoy everything you like. It's all you got to do. I don't have to go hang out with people I don't want to hang out with. It's all people I love. Occasionally, you have to do like a, you know, like a podcast to like sell the comic. Yeah. And that's a slog. Yeah. But otherwise, it's...
Hang out with two assholes you don't want to see, you know what I'm saying? Hey, Patton, I could talk to you for 35 hours.
I could honestly talk to you way too long.
It is a just, it's just a happening when you're here. It means a lot to me. Thank you.
Remember you came, I was, I'm sorry that I'm saying this. We were in the Soho House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you came up, you were bringing your wife and daughter to breakfast, and I had brought my daughter there because they had a kids activity day. But I was up at the bar at the Soho House, and I was reading the second volume of the Lyndon Johnson biography. And you
went, Robert Caro.
And you went, of course you're reading.
You know, that's what celebrities do in their downtime.
Yeah, like Sunday
they go to
club.
A bar and read Robert Caro's.
Yeah, lazy Sunday reading.
He's just reading Master of the Senate, which basically you can't fire an A-15 bullet through it.
Exactly,
it's that thick.
Yeah, it's that thick.
Yeah, they actually, there are many tanks now in the military that are just covered in Robert Caro books. All right. Patton, go with God.
Yes, always.
Thank you.
Gourley, I want to address something that I feel badly about, which is your birthday. You turned 50 recently.
Yeah.
I had thought of this idea for a gift and went looking for it and found it. And I, through my assistant, David Hopping, and man, that guy's a great assistant.
Okay.
Anyway.
He was trained by a really great assistant, so it makes sense.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who did you get to do that? Okay. So the point is, ordered this set of something for you, vintage, and I thought, this is really cool, and time goes by, and I think it's going to get there in time for your birthday, and then it doesn't. Then there seems to be some kind of issue, and then David Hopping tells me today that there's like a Postal Service investigation going on this thing that I ordered for you. So I don't know if that means these things are gone, if they were stolen, or what's happening. But the first thing David said to me today was there's a Postal Service investigation into trying to track this birthday gift down for you.
Did you send me a bunch of severed hands again?
Yes.
Oh,
how did you know?
I don't need those anymore. I'm good.
Yeah, Matt, I got you a gift too, and then there was also an investigation,
disappeared. No.
This is what I wanted to talk about.
I don't know what happened.
Assistant
got you a gift, and I forgot. I don't know where it went.
No,
I love that you have an assistant. Sona, this is why I'm bringing this up. Is that this sounds? Where is David Hopping? Isn't he here somewhere? See if you can find him. I want him to verify this.
Buy
if
this.
You can, this smacks of a lie. That's the problem.
Lie from it David of, or someone else?
No, from me.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
It sounds like.
Yeah, you're definitely lying.
Well, no, I'm not. But it is, first of all, it's a stretch for someone of my stature to be getting you a gift.
Oh, boy.
So that's a stretch in the first place, right? Who would think that I would ever do that, you know?
Okay.
That's not something I would do. Exactly. Okay, David's on his way. So I don't know. I worry that you don't believe me. And then Sona picks right up on that and says, that it's a lie. And that's why I need David to come in
here
and
straighten this
out. I've
just never heard of a post office investigation. It just sounds very cagey. And so, I mean, I think I could just say that I got him a gift and it got lost in the mail.
Now you've
blown that.
Oopsie daisy. I know you didn't get me a gift. And
how do you know that he got you a gift?
I don't. And I'm trying to figure out whether I believe him or not.
Yeah. Then how do you know I didn't?
Because
now I'm starting, you know what? I'm starting to now doubt whether or not I got you.
Oh my God.
I'm thinking it over and I'm thinking that maybe I didn't get you a gift.
Oh no.
But I've been covering up for it so long that I now believe the lie. That's now.
Well, give me a hint. What are these things? Give me a hint. You said they're plural? They're things?
Maybe I should just tell you what I got you. I think I should tell you what I got you.
I'm
going to tell you what I got. No, I'm going to tell you what I got you. I'm going to tell you what I got you. Come on, step in, David. Can you get on mic, please? Yeah, that one.
It also could be that David didn't order them.
Or David kept them.
So let me catch David, because I don't know if he's been listening. I'm apologizing to Gourley that his birthday present never came. And then you this morning, tell me what the news you gave me this morning.
So there's an investigation.
An investigation.
Yes.
By who?
UPS.
UPS.
I got an email and a voicemail about it.
Really? Okay. This is the next big true crime podcast.
No, but listen, I think we should make this. People want to know about our lives. They're desperate to know more about us.
Mm-hmm. Are they desperate?
Oh, yeah. No, no.
I think you're like, desperate to have them know more about you.
No. I am like Aristotle Onassis and Sona's Jackie Kennedy and Matt Gourley's like Hubert Humphrey. They just want to know more about us.
Okay.
They want to know our lives. I'm going to tell Matt what I ordered.
Oh, okay? This is fun.
Yeah.
You might not get it.
I don't think you're ever getting these, by the way. But I found online, with the help of David Hopping, we found online, I think they're from the 1950s.
Ooh. Something like that.
And it's like, and it's these really cool vintage cocktail glasses that have like a copper top that makes it, that looks like a palm tree, like a
pineapple.
Tropical. Oh, like a pineapple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool looking. And I thought, oh, this would be so neat for you to have in your house. And then for summer s'mores, we could drink out of them. But these are classic, like, you want to show the picture?
Oh.
And I'm bringing it up now because I don't know where these things are.
UPS?
I have no idea.
If he's not lying, you better get your shit together and deliver them to me.
What it might not have been UPS is, I don't want to blame UPS because, first of all, that's a powerful, big organization.
They might advertise after them. On this podcast, right?
Do they?
If they want to, they better get me my goddamn glasses.
Is that why you don't want to criticize them? I thought,
I'm a supplicant to all major businesses.
Okay.
They don't even advertise. I just show respect to any large company or corporation, no matter what they do. I mean, they could be defense contractors. And I'm like, hey, more power to you.
Yeah.
Keep making those landmines. I don't care.
This episode is brought
to you by Blackwell. Making a lot of money,
Blackwell.
I will bow to them.
Did David actually order the... David, you could be
David,
honest.
Did you follow?
Are you lying? It's okay if you
I'm
are.
Not lying. Okay. Here, I have... Everyone... Hold on.
Oh, wow. I've never seen David snap like that.
Flustered.
Okay. I got this email. Mm-hmm. Hello, David. I hope you're having a nice day. I'm emailing in regards to your recent order of the mid-century pineapple cocktail jars. I'm sorry to hear that you have not received the piece. Our logistics team is currently working with the carrier to start an investigation to determine the whereabouts. This usually takes 8 days to complete.
Show me a picture.
Hold on. Yeah, I want to see a picture. I just want to hear your bullshit legally.
That's not UPS, though. That's the person who sold it to you. The person who sold it to you is lying. They took your money and they're not giving it to you. And then they're going to blame UPS. Well,
Sona,
I would do
terrible...
it. I would do that.
The weird thing is that Sona, I got a thing.
We know you would do anything. I mean, I think if we were talking about, I stole a car last night and I took it for parts and now I'm going to chop it up. You'd be like, I'd do that. You're a terrible, terrible person.
Here, buy my pineapple glasses, and then I'll ship these.
Let me ask you something,
Sona.
Did you
steal
my pineapple glasses?
Zoom in.
Here, how do we get a good shot of these? How do we get a good shot of these? They're very cool looking.
Whoa.
Oh, they're
pretty cool. No, that's just, all you can see is the top there. Here, why don't you get, let me get closer.
Wow.
There you go.
Oh, that's wow.
I mean, aren't those cool? And we got you four.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would be amazing because the drinks I'm going to make for Chill Chums are kind of tropical.
Mm. Yes. I thought these would be perfect for you. And guess what? They're not cheap. This was a very nice gift and I think an incredible gesture on my part. Right, David?
Yep.
Thank you. Well, anyway.
I appreciate you, but that's pending delivery. I'm going to say thank you with an asterisk until I'm sipping out of these boys.
Yeah, you can't. You can't force Matt to thank you for a gift you haven't given him yet.
You're guilty.
I showed you a photograph of a gift that I intended to give you before it went missing. So I think I get a big thank you.
I will say thank you. That is very nice of you.
Don't thank him yet, Matt. You can't thank him yet. You don't have him.
I've been told I have to rescind that thank you.
Yeah, you don't have him yet. You can't force
him
to thank you
for a gift
that's
lost. Let me be clear about
something.
I'm going to do you a favor, Sona. Sona in no way was impugning the shipping company or the company that sold us. These are companies, and as I said, I love all companies, whether they make liquid nitrogen or plutonium, whether their job is to destroy the planet or not. If it's a company that makes money, I'm all for them. Yay, companies.
Yay, companies
is the slogan of Conan O'Brien.
Oh, my God.
I don't care what the body count is or the damage to the planet. Yay, companies. All right. So there we have it. This is now a true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. We have our crime, which is the missing four mid-century pineapple cocktail glasses. This is a real mystery. We don't know what's going to happen, and we'll keep you posted. And I think a nation is gripped by this unsolved crime.
Yeah. Serial season 12.
Did you get me a gift?
Sona.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I got you a pineapple.
The gift of employment.
He just got you a bunch of pineapples.
Yeah. I got you real pineapples, and they're rotting fast. All right. We'll keep you posted.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.